Hey, Cleaning Nation, welcome to the Grow My Cleaning Company podcast. We've got a special new and improved intro. For the first time in 3 years, we're doing an open to the public live event. It is limited to 12 amazing owners of cleaning companies that are doing six figures and want to do seven. You cannot sign up. You have to only get a call and see if you're a fit. But if you want info, growmycleaningcompany.com/live, growmycleaningcompany.com/live. If you would like info and hanging out with me, my bride, 11 other six-figure entrepreneurs who want to go to seven, and get the entire Clean Profit Method to the best of my abilities in just about 3 days. growmycleaningcompany.com/live. So I'm going to read his question and I'll answer it. Full-time employees versus subcontractors. I only have subcontractors now, but feel like full-time employees would be needed soon to scale. I don't have a storefront for training, supply pickup, et cetera. Any advice? All right, those are three separate issues. Full-time versus part-time, contractors versus employee, W-2. And when should I get an office and what would that look like? I'll take them one by one because those are all, I don't say universal, but everyone's going to deal with that at some point. Most of you will deal with most of those things at some point in your business. Okay. So the big thing with employees versus subcontractors, there's really two biggies. And if we can overcome them, then it kind of gets to, I'm going to give you what I'd coach you to do, but I'm not going to fight you. But the two big ones, I will fight you. So one is it legal in your state or province? Unfortunately, it's the same in Canada as it is in the US, and I'm not as familiar with Australia and UK, but I'm pretty sure from the coaching I've done there, it's similar. I'd like it if the government just did a very clean cut and dry, this is an employee, this is a contractor. They do not do that. They do guidelines. The guidelines are semi-nebulous and they change, and they also change state by state, so or province by province. So general rules of thumb are you paying a human being or are you paying a corporation? If you're paying a corporation, that is an indicator they're a subcontractor. If you're paying a human, that is an indicator they're an employee. Are you giving them instruction on what to do, training, which you should be? That's an indicator they're an employee. Are you controlling their time, when they show up and where they go? That is an indication of an employee. Are you providing them supplies that they must use? And you should be providing them supplies. And that would be like McDonald's going, everyone get the exact same Big Mac, but you all buy your fries and buns wherever you like. That would be impossible. Those are the general guidelines. The problem is at the end of the day, if you get audited, it's going to be some bureaucrat making $62,000 a year that just unilaterally goes, nope, they're employees, back taxes, back fees, you're screwed. Or, yep, good, you're fine. And that's that. and that's not a place I ever want to be in. So if I was going to do, so long story short, I would coach you to do W-2 just because it's a lot less of a pain. But again, I want you to understand the why, not just, hey, shut up and do what I say, because that's not wildly helpful. Although it feels better for me, if that's worth anything. So because of the nebulousness and I just don't want any exposure, the only reason I would consider, only universe I would consider doing subcontractors versus W-2, if I had an attorney firm, not a human being who could die, move or quit or give up or go back on their word, but a firm that says, these are subcontractors. If and when you get audited, I will stand by you and you're going to pay for that. That ain't free, but you'll pay either way. And we will prevail. And I'm confident. And there's a team of us. So if one person dies or is not here when you get audited, it's not like, well, Steve said that, but he ain't here. It's like, as a company, as a corporation, we will stand behind you in an audit. And we are very confident we are going to prevail if you do X, Y, and Z. I'm not saying at that point I would recommend W-2. I'm saying I would be open to it at that point. Or I would not be open to it unless I had that kind of an arrangement with a lawyer I trusted or a firm I trusted that knew my state law. So I'm not even looking for a national firm. I want to presence it because sometimes there's state law or city law that overlays federal law on some of these issues. Second issue, which for me is more of a moral thing, is workers' compensation insurance. Technically, if you're a subcontractor, it is your responsibility to get your own workers' compensation insurance. Lindsay, I think, I remember she's a subcontractor and employee, but if she's a subcontractor, I don't pay for her workers' comp. I don't know if she pays for her own. I don't care because she's just sitting in her office. She's not doing it. I'm not asking her to go out into the world and perform things with her body where she could get hurt. All of your people, you are going to ask to get into a car. And I'm not a lawyer, but it could be argued if they're going to or from somewhere in a car at your behalf and they get into an accident, that could be at work. And if they get killed or something happens, that could be, again, I'm not a lawyer, but I guarantee this in America, anyone can sue you for anything. You will absolutely get sued. No question. And when you're the big rich employee and they're a poor, God forbid they're Hispanic, you're a minority, you lose. Even if you're a minority, you're a rich business owner, they're a poor minority, you're out, you lose. Like, I hate to say that, but I don't think it's any better in Canada, frankly. So I don't want to be in that situation legally. And then also morally, if they're on a ladder, they're doing something and they do get hurt. I've been in business 25 years. I've had two injuries. Neither were, you know, one was a pretty bad, you know, like bust, like hospital injuries, but not like death or, you know, permanent dismemberment or anything like that. And thank God we had a workers' compensation. Like, they just paid for everything. I didn't have to worry about it. There was no negotiation about, like, I wasn't negotiating against my employee. We paid our insurance. They dealt with the insurance company. The insurance company treated them fairly. I could just support them and love them. And that made me feel a lot better, both for lost wages, all the hospital bills, and maybe some sort of, I don't even know what happened, but they all felt treated fairly. And it didn't cost me tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars, not to mention the time and effort it would have taken to mitigate that or to deal with that would have been a part-time job till it got sorted. And both of those were like 6-month ordeals. So the workers' compensation, I don't love as a liability thing. And I certainly don't love as a, you know, we obviously have workers' compensation when I'm in construction because we're actually doing dangerous work, and God forbid you guys are not doing dangerous work, but that you are sending human bodies out into the world to do things. So it's not like, you know, if it was a secretary, I'd be like, yeah, you do what you want to do, but when you're like, go out there, get in your car, do a thing, there's exposure. So the way you could mitigate that is pay for the workers' comp, because technically they're supposed to pay for their own, but anyone that's ever had contractors, like, what is the chances they're paying for their own? Like zero and next to zero. And even like, well, I'm going to get workers' compensation. I'm going to make sure that what, daily, weekly, like, how, you know, that's a big administrative task. So for me, even if I had contractors, if they're out in the world doing things that I thought was a chance they would get injured, I would still pay for the workers' compensation insurance, just because for me, that not just from a moral standpoint, but from a business standpoint, it just makes sense. I don't want to build a multi-million dollar business worth millions of dollars, and then one stupid thing, I'm like, well, there, we had a good run, it's all gone. Like, it's just pissed away. I don't like that. The insurance is cheap for me for that. And then second, just from a liability standpoint. So those are the two big things I would need to feel confident in: the workers' comp that was taken care of. And the only way I would feel confident with that, if I was paying for it. And if I'm paying for the workers' comp, the only thing we're saving money is the payroll taxes, which is only like 15%. It's just not that. Now it's like, well, shit, we're not really saving that much money. The workers' comp's half what we're saving. So that's why I'm, I coach 1090, I coach W-2, even if you could legally, I don't say get away with, but make a case in your area, in your circumstance. And also, I don't want to dance, because a lot, like in California, you can't give them any instruction. If you tell them at all how to clean, any training, employ, and it's not that bad in all states, but I don't want to be like, okay, Ted, I need you to do it this way, but legally I can't really tell you that. Like,
yeah, I get it.
Yeah. So that, I hate to get into a whole thing, but we go through that, and people, and last thing, which is completely pragmatic, having nothing to do with anything else. God forbid you try to compete with me, with your contractors, and I have W-2 employees. I will eat your lunch every time, because you're either commercial or residential. If you're commercial, I'll just go, hey, yeah, if you want to get sued when someone gets injured, God bless, save a nickel. And I promise you, people that are doing multi-million dollar businesses are not interested in, well, this guy's $2,300 a month and this guy's $1,700, but this guy's completely uninsured and illegal and I've got massive exposure. You're fired. You're not only fired, they're pissed that you did it and the conversation's over. When it comes to residential, if you're dealing with million dollar homes, which you should be, as a owner of several multi-million dollar homes, I'm not as interested. Is it $600 or is it $300? I'm like, you're going to put illegal people in my house if someone gets, because you know everyone's going to get sued. And I'm like, oh, great, I'm the other rich white guy that's going to go down because you didn't have your thing. And now you might even sue me and go, well, I was an employee. I mean, the whole thing gets nutty. And most of them don't know that. And as long as your competitors don't know that, fine. But if you, again, we think, oh, we're saving money, but we're not. We're chintzing out on our clients. And the clients, takes half a salesperson to just elucidate that for your prospects, and you're boned because they're going to go, well, I don't want that. I don't care what it costs. I need this done right. So the right clients will not just be okay paying extra for W-2 employees. They will be pissed if they thought you were trying to pull a fast one or not educate them on what you were doing and who was in their home, potentially, arguably, illegally. God forbid they get a good salesperson with them that really clarifies the exposure. Now, not only do you get the bid, you look stupid. Real quick, Cleaning Nation, if you can think about how you found out about this podcast, maybe a tweet, a Facebook message, iTunes search, some sort of Instagram post, the only way we grow is word of mouth. We don't do paid ads. We don't run ads. You are it. The only ask I have is if you're getting value, share the love. However you found out about this, if it's a review or post, whatever it is, do that. Pay it forward so the next cleaning company owner can change their life as well. Back to the show. That said, the part-time, I'm big on part-time just because as you scale, and you said, as I want to scale, I can assure, who is picking my phone? I can assure you, you're going to need part-time to scale. It just, the numbers don't work. If you get 100 hours worth of work, two teams, well, that'd be one team of 40 hours. Let's even make the numbers work perfect. 80 hours of work. So perfect. Two people, 40 hours. We're good to go. Okay. When, not if one doesn't show up, now what? The other guys could work 80. It's insane. So if you've got six people working 80, that's 15 hours each. If one guy doesn't show out up, the five people, 80 hours divided by five, like 17, like nobody even notices. So you absolutely want part-time people. It's just so much easier to have 12 dials to move as opposed to five. And also the way it positions you is when you start getting 30, 40 hours a week. And by the way, I understand some people, it feels like everyone, it's not. Some will go, I got to have 40 hours, Ted. You don't understand. Then you tell them, then get a bit of skill set that will pay your bills. Like, this is an insane job for someone to be like, I would like to have a 3-bedroom, two bathroom house with a garage and my kid to go to college, and your 40-hour cleaning job is going to, like, no, that's an insane proposition. This is for extra money, right? If you want a better Christmas for your family, a better vacation, save for retire, whatever, you can have some financial goals that this can help with. But if you think this is going to pay your bills, get up your skill set. This is not a good 40-hour week job. Same thing, I get pissed about minimum wage. Like, it's not a living wage. It's like, it's not supposed to be. Get some damn skills other than flipping burgers and you can make more money. That's a little political. You don't have to listen to that if you don't agree. But the more people, anyone that disagrees, sorry, but the needing more people absolutely makes sense. And don't listen to the people that are like, I got to have 40 hours a week, because they all say that. I found usually 1 in 7 to 1 in 10 will actually do that. You give them 30, 40 hours, they bitch, they do a bad job, they complain. And God forbid someone doesn't show, now you need to work 50 hours. Forget, you're the beggar. I never want you to be the beggar. The otherwise is they all get 15 to 20 hours, 25 at the most. The good ones get 25, B's get 15 to 20. And someone doesn't cover a shift, now I get to go to Anna and go, hey, Anna, I know you've been dying for extra hours. Here's your opportunity, girl. I'm going to give you an extra shift. You kick ass. We'll give you some more next time. Very different than, hey, Anna, I know you've already worked 35 hours a week. I know you're exhausted. I know you want to see your family. Please, 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 please. Is there any way you could possibly, I hate that vibe. I hate it. So that's why that 15 to 20 hours, 25 at the most, gives you just a ton of flexibility. The 30, 40 hours, one person quits or doesn't show and you're screwed. And it is very, I think you're a little newer, Tad. So I'll tell you how this plays out. Certainly when you get dozens of employees, 0 to 3 times a year, you'll have a culling where 3 or 4 or 5 within a span of 10 days all quit just because you've got some culture issue, something happens. So I promise you, if they're all working 30, 40 hours a week and one quits, it ain't great. When 4 quit, you are boned. So you just, again, same thing. If you've got 40 employees as opposed to 20 and 6 quit, it's not fun, but not a big deal. You got 20 employees and 4 quit, we got problems. All right. Any questions on full-time versus part-time before we go? Tad, you were as quiet as, well, we spoke on the phone. You talked. Now you're like super silent. What's your thoughts, questions?
No, nothing. No, I mean, it's good info. Yeah. I mean, it's all straightforward. It was just kind of looking for details and advice on it. And I was happy to kind of hear, because I'm actually have my first group interview tonight. So kind of running through, hopefully get a couple more prospects and take it from there. But yeah, that's been the big hiccup is subs versus full-time.
Okay. And it's pretty easy to switch to subs, but I would definitely, I don't know what your time frame, I would definitely do my customer profitability spreadsheet based on employees. Even if you're not going to switch, you're going to switch over a span of 90 days. Let's just rip that band-aid and kind of know we have, so we're not dealing with two things at once. Okay. Last thing, storefront for training. I got to tell you, having had a construction company, a car dealership, businesses that were very location heavy, like you physically had to do work at a place, or with cars that physically had to be there. And we actually, obviously had service and all that. My goodness, when I started this coaching thing and I could work from anywhere, it was the best day of my damn life. Not having an office was phenomenal. I didn't realize what a drag it was. It's not just the money. A lot of people are like, well, I'm big enough. I can afford a $1,500. You know, it wasn't that. It was, okay, you got to insure it and get the internet. And then God willing, you got, you know, 0 to 3 times a year, somebody breaks in the middle of the night and you're the guy in the alarm. It just, the whole thing sucks. Or, you know, like it was so, I hate to be terrible, but doing the whole, what was it? Antifa roving bands of crazy. Had I had a storefront, I would have been all stressed out. I have nothing. I got my house and we're pretty armed. So come get some. But had I had a business, I'm like, oh my gosh, what do I do? Like, you know, do I have to hire? It just would have been a whole thing. And I was like, sorry, chumps, better you than me.
Well, that's so the thing in today's world. I don't see it really being needed anymore outside of picking up supplies and or a training facility. But that would probably be my question is, okay, how do you get the supplies to, you know, your employee's house? How do you get out in the field and train them if there's no physical location? Is that almost like having a trainer hit the road or go to a building or a property or a job with them for on-site training almost? Or what's kind of your feedback for training?
Luckily, we've thought this through and have a system for it.
Oh, okay. I'm obviously not there yet, but yeah.
Yeah, it's in steps 8 and 9, but happy to give you a sneak. You don't have to, it's not like it's a secret. You have to wait. So two things. You hit it spot on. So what I really like about your perspective, Ted, is most people fight with the emotional, like my father-in-law who's passed now is this world famous architect. And when he was in his 80s and things were kind of slowing down for him, he had this beautiful office that was just a waste of money and everyone around him could see like, you don't need that. But he was, you know, from his time, you had an office and it was a thing. And I think sometimes in our industries, we have that, some of us, not everybody has that. You got to have an office and it'll be legit. Then it'll be real. So I really want you to disconnect, not you, all of you, just disconnect from that. It's a headache. It's a pain in the ass. No office is phenomenal. And then get to where Tad's at. We're like, okay, but I still have some things that need to be done. I'm fine with no office, but how do I check these boxes that still need to be checked? So I want everyone to adopt that perspective and get off the, I got to have an office. I'll be real. My parents will love me or whatever weird stuff we have that you'll find is it's just a pain in the ass. Anna sitting in her office going, yeah, I can vouch. This whole thing's just a pain in my ass. It's worth nothing. Anna's like, could you shut up, Mike? You're making me feel stupid here. So not Anna. She's smart. Everyone else that has an office, you're killing yourself. But Anna's a magical unicorn that can have an office and not hate it. Okay. So you said a couple of very specific things, picking up and dropping off supplies when it comes to, and I'm just going to answer, I know you're not commercial, but I want everyone to get it. When it comes to commercial, that should be your janitorial supply company and the janitor's closet at your facilities. You don't need to have that there. On the residential side, literally I'm going to rent a storage unit if I can find somebody else's office. That's good. Cause I don't mind the money. It's the, I have to be in charge. I have to pay the electric bill and have the internet. And when something gets broken and negotiate lease and there's just all this churn that is associated with office, I don't want any of that. So I would just like to rent someone else's office. You can do a WeWork for if you want something fancy. I could go to Anna because she's jumped out and be like, hey, you're probably spending $2,000 a month for that. Can I rent 200 square feet in your warehouse or 100 square feet to put my garbage and just meet once a week and I'll give you $300? And she'll go, yes, please. And she'll have all the headache and I'll offset some of her rent and she can have all the headache and I can just get her a little patch of floor. So I'm really just looking for a place to meet weekly. And this is residential and commercial. Your entire company culture can be managed with weekly meetings, monthly parties, quarterly reviews. That's all you need. Weekly meetings, monthly parties, quarterly reviews. The weekly meetings can literally be anywhere your supplies are. So ideally, not everyone's going to be able to pull this off, but if you're in a town where you can find not a Starbucks probably, but like a local coffee shop where you can be like, I will give you $300 a month in coffee and donuts or whatever the hell you want to provide. Many of them will have a little conference room, you know, that can handle 8 to 20 people, which should be plenty. And you got a little place in the back I can store my stuff or find a rental unit, just like a storage thing near, and then do the coffee shop near and you meet at the coffee shop and they buy their stuff. But I like once a week you pick up and drop off supplies. So whoever you're paying to be the driver, they should pick up and drop off supplies once a week. So they would just take them home with them. They're not going to like drop them off every night. So that would be the supply thing in the weekly meetings. Just again, you can even go to like Regis, or there's a bunch of these, you know, you can for $300 have an office where they do all the management headache and you just get a conference room or whatever you need. So long story short, whether it's Anna or a coffee shop or Regis or WeWork, find someone else that has office space and all the associated headache and just give them a small amount of money to chunk off what you need, right? Yeah. When it comes to training, the way that we coach you to do it is zero to trainer, 90 days. So the way that a new employee becomes a full-time, you're now all in employee, is he trains the next guy or she trains the next gal. So the training all happens on site. Like when I bought my Service Master franchise, they did have, you know, their little training facility with their little bathrooms and their floor that probably got waxed, you know, 20 times a year or whatever. That you don't need that at all. Like that was a multi-$100 million company, maybe billion, probably multi-$100 million at the time, training hundreds of owners. You know, it was way, way, way bigger than what we're doing. So for residential, you're literally going to just train them on site. And actually we show you how to do that in steps 8, but you don't need a fake training. And if you're really uptight about it, you can have them clean your house if that's something you're comfortable with. Some people aren't, some people are, or a friend's house, or hey, can you be the trainer? I'll give it a half price. Or, you know, I don't think you need any of that. That's more just for the people that emotionally like, oh, I can't possibly, like, okay, those are some concessions that you can make. I would just send them in a client's house and just be honest. Hey, Anna, just so you know, or for every client, hey clients, hey Anna, just so you know, we're constantly training, getting new people. So my commitment to you is not that we're going to be perfect. Give us long enough, we'll screw up. But if we ever screw up, we'll make it wrong. We'll make it right. We'll fix you. So if something goes up and there's a trainer, you know, just tell me, we'll sort you out. And Anna's 9 times out of 10 going to go, I don't care, whatever. Like it'll be clean, right? Okay. And I'm done talking about this. All right. Does that give you the confidence you need to move forward in all three of those? Any other questions?
Thank you.
Well, here we are, the end of the podcast, and you made it. Great job. I've got a little bonus for you before for sticking through with me. But like I mentioned before, if you got value out of this podcast and you want to show a little love, subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes, Spotify, wherever the heck you're listening to this thing, share it with a friend, share the love. And as a special thank you for those of you that stuck with me to the end, how about I give you my personal phone number so we can text? It's a great way for me to get to know you, your business, your goals personally. So shoot me a text now, 602-932-6431, 602-932-6431. I am the only one who responds to these texts, and I will personally respond to everyone I possibly can as long as this number is manned. I don't know how long we're going to keep this at the end of the podcast, so grab it now, 602-932-6431. Give me a text, say hey, can't wait to meet you.